Welcome, everyone. This is Patty Malik, and this is Get Your Business Mojo On. Thanks for joining us tonight. Our guest tonight is Derek Rydell. Welcome, Derek.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to have you. Thanks for joining us. Mm-hmm. For those on the line that don't know Derek, let me give you an introduction here. After a life-changing brush with death experience, Derek Rydell considered becoming a monk, then a minister, then cloistered himself in his apartment without TV or news and meditated for several years, finally emerging to become a licensed integrative therapist, a professional writer, and adopt a monk. He went on to train top executives at Fortune 500 companies in relationship and communication skills, coached thousands of writers, artists, and entertainment professionals on how to create more enlightened entertainment, and has worked with a diverse array of people around the planet, helping them live a more passionate, purposeful life. As a professional writer, Derek has ghostwritten 6 books and authored 2 of his own, the Amazon bestsellers, I Couldn't Have Written a Better Movie Than That, and There's No Business Like Soul Business, A Spiritual Path to Enlightened Screenwriting, Filmmaking, and Performing Arts. As a licensed spiritual therapist and teacher, Derek has held leadership positions at Agape International Spiritual Center, one of the nation's largest and fastest-growing spiritual communities. He has been a star speaker at top writing and entertainment expos, led sold-out writing and personal development courses at the Learning Annex and in Europe, and continues to coach, motivate, and inspire thousands of individuals through his own communities at enlightenedentertainer.com and derekrydell.com. Currently, he's teaching his revolutionary program, The Law of Emergence, which takes you way beyond the law of attraction. And I will say, you know, if you are on this call tonight, you're right where you need to be, as they say. You know, the opportunity presented itself for Derek to be here tonight, and you may be wondering what the law of emergence has to do with business. But as Derek says in his book, if we want a more abundant life, you need to create inner habitat where abundance can live. So welcome again, Derek. And
thank you.
Why don't you start by telling us what the law of emergence is and how it's different from the law of attraction?
Yeah, well, the law of attraction is, of course, a law, and it's true, and it's a wonderful thing. And I like to look at it like one of my mentors, Michael Beckwith, talks about the 4 stages of unfoldment, spiritual unfoldment, personal growth. And then the first stage is victimhood, where you believe life is happening to you. And the second stage is the stage of the creator or the manifester, where you discover certain principles like the law of attraction and realize that actually you are happening to life, that you have the ability through your thought to manifest and to control your life. And so as you develop the ability of control, you let go of victimhood. But that's only the beginning. It's like the training wheels of metaphysics. And then you have to realize that one of the problems with that level is that most of the time when we're seeking to create or manifest, you know, and just make a better life, we are oftentimes reacting to cultural values, to societal pressure, to parental fantasies, to our own self-image, which is a created thing. It's something that's been created over time. It's a historical perspective. And so it's often a reaction to whether it's worries, doubts, fears, I'm going to show them, or, and we may not even be aware of all these subtle reasons, but so we come up with a vision for our life or our business, and we go for it, and we use these principles like the law of attraction to create it. And oftentimes then we care, because it's coming from a reaction of some level of lack or fear or a stressful belief on some level, that gets magnified. So what I like to say is we may manifest a bigger house but feel even less at home. Or we might manifest a bigger paycheck but just feel broke at a higher income bracket. And so we carry these underlying fundamental self-image issues and sense of inadequacy with us. and just they just become magnified. And so, but it's still an important stage to realize that we actually do control the outcomes in our life, that we're not a victim. But ultimately, we need to move to the third stage, which is realizing that we are a channel of something bigger than our ego, something bigger than our historical perspective, something bigger than what's ever really happened before. The truth is we're unprecedented. What we're here to be as individuals in our personal and professional life is to download and to bring something that's never happened quite like that before. We are unprecedented. But in order for that that we're really here to reveal to come through us, we have to, as Emerson said, get our bloated sense of nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. And so this third stage, it's the first stage is to it, the second stage is to me, and we're, I mean, I'm sorry, to it, to me is the first stage, victims. The second stage is to it, where we're manifestors. The third stage is through me, and we're channels. And that's where the law of emergence operates. And that's where we begin to let go of our ideas and our agendas of what we think we are and what we think life is and what we think we're supposed to be and do, and become open to a larger idea that's trying to emerge through and as us. And I use the analogy of an acorn, and you can use any seed really, but in nature we see this all the time. In the acorn, the oak already exists. It's invisible, but it's there in potential. And I would argue it's there even more than just mere potential, but it's there. And when the conditions are right, that which is already inherent in the acorn emerges. Now, the acorn doesn't need to go out and make something of itself. You know, it doesn't need to go out and try to create an oak or build an oak or even attract parts and pieces of an oak to it. And that's one of the things is with the law of attraction, in all of our well-intentioned manifesting, there's an underlying subtle and sometimes not so subtle sense that we are already lacking, that we're broken or half-baked or incomplete, and we have to attract the missing components to us. And this is an erroneous understanding of what's really going on in my experience, that like the acorn, we've already got the whole thing in us. Like any seed in nature, the full potential for our destiny of greatness is already contained in the seed, which is already planted in our soul, in the soil of our soul. And what we're really called to do is create the right inner conditions for that that we already are to emerge. It's like Michelangelo and the famous sculpture, the David. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talked about how he didn't create it. What he did was he saw the already completed masterpiece that was trapped in that block of marble, and he just chipped away everything that wasn't the David, that it was already there. And if you know a little about my Michelangelo, he believed, like Plato talks about, that there are these perfect forms in heaven, and that his job as an artist was not to create anything, but to discover and uncover that which already was in the perfect state, these divine or heavenly ideas. And Plato talked about the same thing with the allegory of the cave. So likewise, we are to look at our life or our business or a particular project not so much as we're trying to make something happen, but to make that which already is welcome and to begin to chip away everything that isn't, to catch a glimpse of the vision of the masterpiece that our life is that's hidden in this block of mortal stone, and begin to create the conditions and to chip away everything that isn't that already perfect idea that we are and our business is, and then watch as it begins to emerge. So it's really a 180-degree shift from a lot of the ways we've been taught, even in religion and spiritual, metaphysical, new age, new thought, you know, with all the best intentions, what I call the self-improvement movement, you know, we have been led down a path to some extent which has actually brought us further away from our authentic self and a true sense of freedom and fulfillment and peace, because we're constantly trying to improve this self that can't be improved upon. It's already perfect. And that's just in a nutshell some of the ideas that why the – one other example I like to use, by the way, in terms of the law of attraction versus the law of emergence is I use the example of the caterpillar. And, you know, if the caterpillar could do this, if it could, you know, manifest and create its perfect life, you know, and create a vision board, you know, for its ideal life, it would – you know, it might envision itself as, you know, having the perfect caterpillar body and the perfect caterpillar mate and the perfect caterpillar car and the biggest caterpillar house and be the most successful caterpillar in the forest. And it might even become the envy of other caterpillars. The problem is that it's meant to be a butterfly. Who it really is a butterfly. Mm-hmm. And if it puts all of its energies into manifesting this ideal caterpillar life, to a certain extent, in some cases, to a great extent, it's actually becoming trapped by a very limited idea of who it is and thwarting its true destiny of greatness. Because as it emerges and actually stopping that process, because as it emerges to become what it really is, which is a butterfly, it's going to be living at heights and in worlds where all of those caterpillar things will be utterly meaningless and relatively useless. Maybe it could have a summer home, a summer caterpillar home where it lands on the ground, you know, but for the most part, it's going to be living in the trees and in the sky and from a very different perspective. And that's the true destiny of all of us, is that for most of us, where we're meant to live from is a much greater, grander height of peace and joy and abundance and success and service than we have even imagined. In our largely survival-based or material acquisition-based society. One other example I would say is, and then we can go on to the next question, is the, you know, there's certain seeds in the forest that require a forest fire to cause them to crack open and germinate. And so often we're using the law of attraction and all these metaphysical New Age success principles to cause success and or within this limited framework of what we think we are and or to thwart and stave off what we think are bad things and crises and all that. And if that seed could pray and manifest and do vision boards as well, it would envision a forest where fires never occurred. It would envision a forest, you know, where there were, you know, there was sufficient fire security, whatever. And as that fire started, it would begin using visualization and affirmations to put the fire out. The problem is, again, if it succeeded at putting that fire out, it might think it's succeeded, but it has actually failed and prevented the very conditions that were there as evolutionary catalysts to crack it open and allow it to become a mighty tree rather than merely a seed. So it will go on living the rest of its life, again, trying to become the best seed in the forest rather than opening up to its real destiny, which is so much more than it had imagined. So our true purpose, our true potential is beyond our imagination. It's actually in a realm of what I call emergination, which is a sort of the imaginative viewpoint of the soul. And so anyways, that's a... hope that's a good jumping off point.
So is there a process to the law of emergence that you go through, or
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it's primarily the first step is the beginning of accepting at least the possibility that whatever you're trying to, whatever you want, whatever you're trying to create, whether it's in your business, in a project, in a relationship, or in your life in general, is beginning to understand that what is true of nature is true of you, that like the seed, it's already in you. You know,
accepting.
First of all, it's accepting that. You know, in the Christian scripture, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within you, and seek first the kingdom. And it's the same thing is said in all the great truth teachings of the world. And so realizing that it's already in you, there's nothing outside of you to get. You're already the thing itself. The masterpiece of your life or your business is already hidden in that block of stone. And so that's the first thing, is acceptance, that you're already it. Then the second stage is another form of acceptance, and that is wherever you are right now, whatever your life looks like, whatever your business looks like, is total radical acceptance of that situation. Because any attempt to try to improve your life or your business from a standpoint of thinking and seeing it as anything less than already perfect as it is an underlying affirmation of lack and limitation and scarcity and fear and resistance. And you are literally sowing seeds through the law of cause and effect of future limitation, That's what I was saying. Even if you manage to, you know, get a bigger paycheck, you'll just feel broke at a higher income bracket. So we have to start by radically accepting where we are and discovering its perfection. Then the next step is to tap into a vision. And that's different than visualization. Visualization uses the imagination, and it's got its purposes, and it's absolutely a wonderful tool in the right context. But again, it can become a limitation, because what we can we can only imagine that which has already occurred or some, you know, reassortment or recomposition of that which has already occurred. But who we are meant to be, what's trying to emerge as us or as our business, has never happened before. It's unprecedented. Something new is trying to emerge. If it's not new, it's not needed, is what I like to say. You know, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. So there's something that's trying to emerge, and living on that emerging edge requires us to move beyond imagination, beyond visualization, and to tap into a vision. And a vision is not something, it's not a glimpse of what is to be in the future. It's a glimpse of what really is right now in the timeless, in consciousness. And again, if the acorn could catch a vision, it would catch a vision of the oak. The butterfly would catch the caterpillar would catch a vision of the butterfly. So there is a divine or higher idea for our life, for our business, for every aspect of our life. And so we need to take the time to turn within, to let go of our agendas and our ideas, and ask, what is the highest vision of my life or my business? What is, if we believe in God, we could say, what is God's idea of my life or my business? What is higher power's idea? What is my soul's idea? Whatever, what is the highest idea? And begin to catch a glimpse and a vibration of that idea. Then we begin cultivating the inner conditions that make it welcome. I think about it like, you know, if you wanted a polar bear to live with you, but you lived out in the desert, that's going to be a hard thing to do. Even if you could force that polar bear to come live with you, you know, chain it up, it would eventually die. It couldn't survive in those conditions. And so often we're trying to bring things into our life, but haven't cultivated the congruent conditions within us that make it welcome. You know, we wonder why we get money and it just seems to run out the door the minute we turn our attention away from it. And it's because we haven't created the conditions that are welcoming to that vibration of abundance. And so you can certainly use visualization, affirmations and stuff to raise your vibration in this way, as long as you don't become attached to the pictures. But you do want to create an inner vibration and an inner, what I call the ecology of consciousness, that is congruent with that you say you're trying to manifest. So if you're trying to manifest more abundance, which is already in you, it's not outside of you, you're not attracting it to you, you're creating the conditions for it to emerge, then it's about looking at, are your thoughts, your conversations, and your actions congruent with a vibration of abundance? And so, you know, if you're having conversations, you know, talking about how bad the economy is and how there's not enough jobs out there and whatever, you know, which is happening, is pretty prevalent these days, even with very well-intentioned spiritual new age and success coaches, they still find themselves getting caught by that kind of conversation. Understand that conversation is an unwelcome environment for abundance. And if you are taking actions, if you find yourself throughout the day thinking, I can't afford this, or taking actions that are not conducive with an abundant vibration or abundant reality, again, that's not going to create a welcoming environment. So there's the thought, there's the word, and there's the deed. And those three things must become congruent with the vision. And that begins to create that. Now, in general, you can never go wrong by cultivating a greater sense, again, of acceptance, of gratitude, of a sense of having consciousness. Again, as it says in the Bible, to he who has, more shall be given. And to he who has not, even that which he has shall be taken away. And this is not talking about material. This is talking about a state of having consciousness. And what I like to say is, one have makes a whole. H-A-V-E. When you have a state, two halves, H-A-L-F, does not make a whole. One half makes a whole. H-A-V-E. So when you have a state of have, H-A-V-E, a state of I have, I am, I can, I am able. When you have a state of I have, no matter what that is focused on, that consciousness of I have multiplies a consciousness of I have. So you get more and more having. If you have a consciousness of I have not, even if you seem to have a whole lot, but your attention is on what's missing, you will multiply a consciousness of lack. The universe doesn't know, doesn't care what you're focusing, what the object of your attention is. It cares what the quality of your consciousness is. So if you have $1 and you just keep focusing on I have, I have, I have, then that will multiply that consciousness and ultimately your abundance. If you have $1,000,000, but you focus on what's missing, what you don't have, you will discover that that will begin to shrink. So the state consciousness of I have, and you can do things like, in my book, There's No Business Like Soul Business, I have a thing called the night pages, which is kind of my response to the morning pages in the artist's way. And it's basically a series of exercises to do at night before you go to sleep. And I take you through various processes like, gratitude, obviously, becoming grateful for everything, counting all your blessings, and then counting everything that you have, both internally and externally, relationships, opportunity, creativity, whatever qualities that you possess, whatever talents, abilities, and just create a list of all that you have, all the things you've achieved or succeeded in that day, even if it was just getting out of bed and brushing your teeth, you make a list of those. And then all the things that you can do. So let's say you're working on a project. Our tendency is to focus on what we can't do. Let's say we have a desire to build a multi-million-dollar business. And from where we stand, that seems impossible. And so what we want to do is, besides accepting where we are, catching a vision, we want to begin to say, well, what do I have right now that could be valuable in that? What talents, gifts, abilities? What insights and ideas? What creative potential? What resources? And then we go to the next one, what can I do? What am I capable of doing? I may not be capable right now of having literally $1,000,000 in the bank, but I can do what? And you might begin to discover, I can begin to create a plan. I can begin to, write 100 different ways that I can begin to raise capital. I can begin to, design my product. Whatever it is, begin focusing on all the things that I can do, all the things that I can be and express, all the things that I have, all the things that I'm succeeding at, all the things that I'm grateful of. And that begins to build a consciousness of abundance and of wealth and of I have, I can, I am able. And that literally creates the fertile condition, the fertile soil for that vision to begin emerging. And it emerges as insight, as revelations, as sudden aha moments of inspiration where you catch a glimpse of what you can do that you didn't even know was possible before. I remember, for example, when me and my wife, we wanted to get a house, and we lived in a condo, and I had an office, and it was just, it was impossible from the point of view of where we were standing. We didn't have enough money, we had a young child and a new baby, soon to be on the way, and in my mind, there was no possibility. But what we began doing is going and visiting model houses and sitting in them and really feeling what it feels like to be in them. And we just had this vision that was pulling us. We knew there was something real about this home. It wasn't an idea we were making up. There was something trying to emerge. And we began to cultivate the inner feeling tone of what it feels like to be in the home. And then we would come back to our place, and we began to invest our heart and our soul and our life in decorating where we lived to make it our castle. So we began to appreciate what we had. And then I began focusing on all the things that I had, all the things that I could do and to be, and just being so filled with appreciation and valuing where we were. And whatever you appreciate, appreciates. It grows in value. And then all of a sudden, one day, I was sitting in my office just feeling so full. Now, nothing had changed in the world in terms of no more money was coming in or anything. But all of a sudden, because this condition was so fertile, all of a sudden there was this pop, and this insight just emerged. And suddenly I could see whereas in the moment before I couldn't see. It's like, whereas before I was blind, now I see. I could see suddenly how it was possible to have this house. Now, again, all it was a sudden realization of what existed that I wasn't able to see before. And within a matter of a week or so, our condo was on the market. Within a matter of, another 6 weeks, whatever it took, it sold, and we were moving into our new house.
Wow.
So, you know, within like 2 months. So, and it literally up-leveled our whole life. Now, but here's what's more. What came with that vision was everything that was necessary to afford and supply that new level of living. So new work emerged, new opportunities emerged, a bigger career vision and direction emerged that took care of all of our needs at that new level. You see what I mean? So just as the oak emerges from the acorn, it brings with it the root system necessary to supply a larger system, and it draws out of the soil the nutrients, more nutrients necessary to supply a larger system. The oak, the acorn, doesn't have to go out and struggle and strive to get it or attract it. It all emerges out of the acorn. The new system, the larger expression, the larger, nutrient base, everything necessary emerges along with that vision, and that's what happened in this case. And, of course, that's happened many, many times in my life. As the vision unfolds and emerges, it brings with it everything that is necessary to fulfill the vision at that new level. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Now, I know in The Secret they were saying that the one element that was missing is the emotion that's attached to your vision. Is that part of your law of emergence? Is that, that emotion?
Well, here's the thing. When at the level of mind creation, which is where that second stage in manifesting occurs, then, they talk about, filling your word with emotion and power, and that does catalyze and create a stronger vibration of that particular thing that you're trying to manifest. But understand that emotion is a byproduct of thought. So the thought comes first, and the emotion follows, not the other way around. So when you're captured by a vision, it generates its emotion. It generates an emotion. You don't have to, put the emotion into it. You draw it out of it. It brings that vibration with it. What's more powerful than thinking of emotion is thinking of a tone, of a quality, and that vision carries with it a certain vibrational quality or vibrational frequency or vibrational tone that is a greater expression of love and of joy and of peace and abundance and power. And so when you are tapped into that vision, if you speak a word from that vision, a word of prayer or affirmation or just your conversation, it's going to carry with it a vibrational tone that is carrying that vision's vibration with it. And so that will increase the manifestation. I think where the problem comes is when people start from their head and try to work their way down, it's lacking emotion because they're just in their head. They're not connected to their soul, to their spirit, to that deep vibration that's trying to emerge through them. So yes, emotion is absolutely a powerful tool. But when you're working from emergence, again, as you're cultivating the conditions, the soil of your soul, as you're, doing these certain things, you're filling, feeling how much you have and are capable of and how grateful you are, that's generating legitimate, authentic emotion. It's not emotion you're trying to, lay on top of anything. It's legitimate. It's the real vibration of your vision emerging. And that is what they're talking about. But that's what's good about that is it's authentic, and it doesn't create any new level of stress. When you think you have to, pump yourself up and generate this emotion to add to your thoughts, then it has a tendency to again, your ego gets involved and there's kind of a push and kind of a stressful energy to it. And underlying that is a sort of anxiousness. And so even if you manage to kind of force yourself into manifesting something through emotion, it's going to carry with it that vibration of anxiousness. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so ideally, you tap into the vision and you cultivate the conditions through, you can use visualization and visualize the most ideal life possible and then let go of the picture and stay with the vibration, with the feeling tone. That's a good way of using visualization. So you visualize the very best that you can imagine, the best business, the best life, and you feel into that. What does it really feel like? And you just get, and it's going to generate a feeling if you're really doing it, because feeling is a byproduct of the thought and of the images. And so then you stay with the feeling tone. You let go of the pictures because you don't want to be limited by the pictures. But you stay with the feeling tone because that feeling tone is the real substance of the vision that's trying to emerge through you. And then you can begin to magnify that feeling tone. You can imagine it as a color in your heart, see it, take deep breath and see it expanding and filling your whole body, and then another deep breath and seeing it pouring out beyond your body, and then another deep breath and see it filling the room you're in and splashing on everyone and everything in your life, and just become intimately at one and intimately familiar with that vibrational tone, that feeling tone. And at a certain point, as you contemplate and hang out with that feeling tone, there's no forcing there, there's no efforting. It begins to embody. It begins to become integrated. And then you'll notice that you'll be walking around one day, and all of a sudden, you just feel this expanded feeling. And you didn't have to do anything to generate it, because you've embodied it. You've embodied it. And when you embody it, that new vibrational frequency must clothe itself in new form. And your life will begin to take on the tone and the timbre and the texture of that new feeling tone. And it will look like things, new opportunities, better manifesting, but all that's really happened is that larger frequency of your being has become visible. And so that's the way that I prefer to do it, the way I just described. And, you know, sincere prayer is another way. And again, affirmations are a great way to do it, as long as you're doing it, as long as you start by getting tapped into that vision and that feeling tone. Again, that's again why, and for those of you that are Buddhist or Muslim or any other religion, please don't be offended that I keep using Christian text. It's just the one I know the best, but I'm a student of all religion. But in the scripture it says that, pray believing that you already have, that you may receive. And it says this in a few different ways, but that wasn't some little sort of metaphysical trick. It was a mystical tool, because Jesus understood that when you pray believing, whenever you're praying or affirming, what's most important is that you start first getting tapped into the awareness that it's already done, that it's already happened, because it has. You know, if the acorn could pray or affirm, its first step would getting in touch with feeling and knowing that the oak is already in it, that it's already a done deal. So now there's no efforting, there's no struggle. There's just a rapport and a communion with reality, with a capital R. And then if you speak your prayer or your affirmation from that place, and now you are in congruence with your vision. You are in alignment with the way things really are, and are creating the right conditions for it to emerge.
You say when our inner conditions are right, that the seed of our potential unfolds, and that's the heart of Law of Emergence.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that? Is it, you know, our inner conditions? Are you talking about our, you know, all of our negative stuff that's going on, or you know, our the obstacles that are keeping us where we are, or what has to change in our inner conditions?
Well, yeah, the inner, what I call like the ecology of consciousness, you know, understand that our life, we don't experience life as it is. We experience life as we are. We don't meet life directly. We meet life through our perception. So our experience, as many people on this call probably know, as I'm sure you do, sort of, you know, metaphysics or, you know, the New Thought 101 is that as within, so without. What we're experiencing in our life is an outpicturing, a perfect outpicturing of the quality and content of our consciousness. That's not to blame us or to judge us if we have seemingly negative things going on, because in the truest sense, none of it's negative and none of it's a problem. All of it is an evolutionary catalyst. But whatever we're experiencing is an outpicturing of our consciousness, because all power and all cause is in consciousness. Nothing moves but consciousness. It's an optical illusion when we look out there and think we're seeing a bunch of people doing things and moving around. And all we're really seeing are states and stages of consciousness unfolding. And so, you know, I like to say, like, move your hand right now. And then I ask the question, what just moved? People will say, well, my hand did. And I go, really? You know, let's reverse engineer that. And you discover that your hand didn't actually move. The muscles moved. The muscles didn't actually move. The nerves moved. The nerves didn't actually move, but a process of electricity and chemicals cascading moved the nerve that moved the muscle, moved the hand. But wait, there's more. You know, and you keep following it back, and you realize there was a thought, and before the thought, there was literally a wave, a movement in consciousness. And that movement was interpreted and ultimately translated into your hand moving. Your hand did not move, your mind did. And so everything in our life is mind in action or consciousness unfolding. So when you understand that, it's on one hand, the first discovery of it is like, oh my God, you know, it's a big responsibility. But the second realization is, oh my God, I can't ever be a victim. You know, all the power is in me. So then we take, you know, real responsibility for the quality and the content of our consciousness. And so, and that's where the conditions are ultimately cultivated. And so, what I've been talking about has been a lot of the steps to cultivating those conditions. You know, the inner feeling tone, the alignment with your thoughts, your words, your actions, the night pages, all these things I've been talking about has been about cultivating those inner conditions.
Okay.
Another area to look at, you talked about, you know, the negative stuff. And what we need to begin to look at are so-called negative stuff as really just the potential, is really like the darkness is the light in potential. Just as the dark soil is life in potential. What is soil made up of? It's literally made up of the death and the decay of previous life forms. And that creates the very substance out of which new life is born. Mm-hmm. And so the dark parts of our consciousness, the shadow side, the dark side, all of that is really, again, in the Bible says the darkness and the light are both alike to thee. There is no duality, that all the so-called negative parts of us are actually greater potential that has not yet been realized. And so when I talk about radical acceptance, it really begins by looking at those parts of us, you know, that we hate, that we want to change, that we want to fix and heal, and beginning to embrace them and recognize they are pure potential. That inner jerk is actually a quality of energy that's seeking to be loved and understood and embraced. And when you really embrace that part of you and seek to understand it and ask what it needs and what its gifts are, and relook at the story that you're telling yourself, that it's telling you, and I can't go through the whole process of that tonight, but you begin to have insights and you begin to reintegrate those parts of you that you have cast out. Now, what's important to understand is that because there's nothing going on outside out there but our own consciousness, everyone and everything that we see is a projection of our own consciousness. So anyone that pushes our buttons negatively is literally showing us a dimension of our own consciousness that we have not embraced and integrated. Likewise, and that's good news and bad news, of course, then anybody that's in anything that's causing us envy, jealousy, or yearning to be more like, that is a projection of our light shadow. So because as we're evolving and growing up, we have everything, and then as we have experiences, we create two piles. We create the I am pile, and that becomes our ego, and then we create the I am not pile, and that becomes our shadow. But they're still in us. You know, so we might have an experience that makes us feel like we're unworthy. So the I am worthy literally becomes part of our shadow. And we project and we experience other people who seem to be so much more confident and worthy than us, and we hate them for that, or we want to be more like them. But what we don't realize is we're really seeing a dimension of our own power. Otherwise, we couldn't see it. We could literally not see it if it wasn't already in us. As thou seest, so thou beest. It's a dimension of us. And that's really good news, because all those people we're looking at and those conditions, you know, of wealth and abundance and successful businesses and relationships and the power and the light that we see, if you can see it and it has an attraction to you, the good news is that's you. You could not see it or feel it if it wasn't you. And so it becomes part of creating the inner conditions to begin to look out and see, oh, my God, you know, that, you know, whatever, that person, that business, that thing, I'm seeing a dimension of myself and beginning to reclaim that and reintegrate that. Just a quick little story. I remember years ago when I did a lot of singing, and I was watching this person sing, and they got up and they sang, and they hit this incredible note, and I was just like, oh, my God, that's so amazing. I wish I could do that. And then I caught myself, and I remembered that what is possible anywhere is possible everywhere, because there's really only one of us here. There's only one mind, one intelligence, one creative being, infinitely individualized as all of us. And I began a process of reclaiming that projection. And within a few weeks, I was on stage or behind the piano singing, and I hit that same note that I never could have hit before, I never thought I could hit before. So that's a really important part, is reclaiming our projections, both our so-called negative ones and our so-called positive ones, what I would call the dark shadow and the light shadow. So and the positive ones are a lot easier. For some, they're not, actually, because there's a self-worth issue. But the negative ones are more challenging. But the negative ones, so-called negative, hold so much power. You know, when you see somebody that you just hate, that just disgusts you, that just revolts you, you know, or whatever, you know, there is so much power waiting to be unleashed in you. And the problem is, as long as you resist integrating that part of you, you are not whole. You know, Carl Jung made the differentiation between fixing and curing and becoming whole. And the only way to become whole is by learning to totally accept everything about us. You know, again, that's why, you know, it says to forgive our enemies, to love our enemies, to resist not evil. All these statements in religion and spirituality are not so that we can become good human beings or become do-gooders. They're deep mystical truths, because as we stop resisting what we think is evil, as we stop resisting what we think is bad within us and without, as we start loving all those things that we think are enemies within us and without, instead of trying to fix them and heal them and change them and affirm them away, as we start to love them and forgive them and stop resisting them and stop judging them and just love them unconditionally and seek to understand their wisdom and receive their gifts, look out. Mm-hmm. Because you're about to discover a level of power and inner authority and spiritual maturity that you haven't even begun to imagine. And then your business and your work and your life will take on a level of authenticity that is beyond what you've imagined. And here's the other gift. Those people that used to really piss you off won't do that anymore, because you will have healed that projection. And you'll begin, and those people that used to make you so jealous, they won't do that anymore, because you've healed that projection. You've reclaimed those parts of you, and now you'll look out and you'll rejoice in the success of others as if it's your own, because it is. And you'll have nothing but compassion for the so-called negativity of others as if it's a dimension of your own that you just love and have compassion for, because it is. And that's where life really gets interesting.
So is that the reason that you advocate, you know, an end to self-improvement movements?
Yes. You know, I do say that. You know, I'm about. I want to create a new. I want to go down with the self improvement movement and create a new. You know, the self acceptance movement, and the self emergence movement. Because self improvement, and I'm going to have to make a distinction here. It's not that, you know, if you're inspired to grow and to learn in some way, and it's truly an inspiration, which means comes from the in spiritus, which is the breath of God, which means the breath. The life of a vision that's trying to emerge through you, that's very different. It has an expanded energy to it, and it's something trying to emerge. The real root meaning of the word desire is of the sire, or of the fathering principle within you. So a sincere burning desire is not something you don't have but you're trying to get. It's something that you already are pregnant with that's trying to get out. And so those kinds of movements of self-improvement are not really self-improvement at all. They're self-emergence. They are the self trying to emerge. But when you are trying to fix, change, cure, heal, improve yourself, your business, your life, or the world, from a inner consciousness, an inner belief, an inner movement of seeing a problem, of seeing lack, of seeing limitation, from stress, from anxiety, from fear, then that is what the law of cause and effect is primarily operating on. Understand, the law of cause and effect operates primarily on your consciousness, not your actions. As the saying, the metaphysical axiom goes, to he who is right in mind, he can do all the wrong things, it'll still turn out right. To he who is wrong in mind, or she, they can do all the, to he who is wrong in mind, they can do all the right things, it'll still turn out wrong. Because the law operates primarily on consciousness. So if you're doing all these self-improvement things, but from an inner state of fear, anxiety, from a self-image of lack, limitation, trying to make the world a better place from seeing it as a terrible place, guess what? You're making it worse. You are exacerbating the problem. I don't care how many plaques you put on a wall or how many initials you get behind your name or how much food you seem to be delivering to the world, you are actually increasing the consciousness of fear, separation, lack, limitation, and sowing seeds of a future suffering for yourself and potentially for others. So, because the consciousness by which you're doing it is what is, what's the word I'm looking for? It's at the top. There's a word there, not priority, but help me out here. What's the word I'm looking for? It's the top. You know, it's the thing that's being acted on. It's primary. It has primacy.
Okay.
So that's why self-improvement is really an oxymoron, you know, and I even say self-improvement is a Western disease. And it's really just a sort of twist on, you know, as we've grown up and we've gotten all these messages that there's something wrong with us and we need a new, bigger car, better house, better body, newer clothes, this, that, the other, in order to make us whole and enough. Well, and some of us got wise to that and said, that's just brainwashing, that's not true, and we turned to self-improvement movement thinking we were getting away from that, but we just got the same exact thing with a different label.
Well, and I think it was all part of, you know, an era where, you know, I think we're evolving more and more, and, you know, we're awakening to, you know, higher vibrations.
Absolutely.
Self-improvement was more, I don't know, what was it, the 70s, 80s, 90s? You know, and I think as we, you know, become more aware, we're, like I said, we're raising our vibrations and understanding more beyond that.
Yes, I think so. I think that is the movement that's taking place, especially because we're finding that so many of the things we're using for self-improvement don't work. I mean, I like to say we've been on a self-improvement kick for decades, if not centuries. And how's it working? You know, are we really more peaceful? Are we really more joyful? Are we really more in love? Are we really happier? You know, do we really feel safer in the world? And
We're still searching for things outside of ourselves.
We are. We're still searching for things. We're still trying to fix the picture up on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than catching a vision of what's really trying to unfold. And the good thing is that all of the so-called crises that we're experiencing are evolutionary catalysts. I like to say that our problems are our answered prayer. And so if we're willing, all of the crises that we're experiencing individually and societally and globally are really a greater something trying to emerge. You know, there's a saying, behind every human aberration is a spiritual aspiration. Something's trying to emerge. And as it tries to emerge through a consciousness that is holding on to a limited concept, it will create crisis. You know, the minute you pray or affirm or intend and decide you're going to be more, have more, do more, that's answered instantly. Instantly. But the problem is that you're holding on to concepts in your consciousness that aren't congruent or equivalent to that which you just affirmed or intended. So as that larger energy and that larger idea now is trying to emerge through your consciousness because you've set it in motion, it's trying to emerge through a narrow conceptual tunnel or funnel. So, for example, you affirm I'm going to be abundant and I am abundant, but you're holding on to concepts of lack and limitation and what's possible and what's not. That consciousness now of abundance, it's activated, and it's trying to emerge through you the minute you set it in motion. But it's trying to emerge through this narrow concept, this mental construct of lack and limitation. So, and if we don't surrender those ideas and those habits of thought, word, and action, and really, really yield to what's trying to unfold in us, it will create pain, it will create crisis. And if as a culture, we are collectively in resistance to what's trying to emerge, it will create national and global crisis. Because that which is trying to emerge, it's trying to emerge. We've activated that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something that's been happening, there's been an energy that's been activated on the planet. And it's trying to emerge, but we're still, you know, governmentally, politically, socially, we're still holding on to some very old, antiquated concepts. And it's trying to emerge through those concepts, that collective consciousness, and it's shaking us up. It's shaking those concepts up. And we're either going to be dragged kicking and screaming into our next evolutionary stage, or we're going to find the grace and the ability to begin to yield and let go of these old constructs so that which is trying to emerge can begin to emerge through us. And it starts with us individually. The more we do it individually, the more we create the conditions for others to be able to do it.
Yeah. Now, you have gifted our audience with a free e-course on the Law of Emergence.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tell people about that. Give us an idea of what's in the e-course.
So much. some people have told me it's too much.
Really?
There's just so much. And there's been just dozens and dozens of people that have wrote in to me, you know, giving testimony of how it's changed their life and, you know, how they're manifesting things and having healings and all these wonderful things. So it's, I believe it's 12 lessons. And it comes, you know, I think every few days or something. And it's really, it's not filler material. It's not one of these bonuses that, you know, that's just kind of filler. It's a full-out, jam-packed e-course and that may not remain free for very much longer. And I do also have an e-book that's coming out if it's not already available tonight. There might be something on the website or something somewhere that's offering it that has taken the e-course and redeveloped it into a beautiful e-book where you can link and get instant access to different sections and things at the touch of a button. And it's really, really, I'm really, really proud of it. So that's another thing. And that has a small price to it. I don't actually know what the exact price is, but it's very low.
What is the name of the e-book? Is that the Law of Emergence?
That's also the Law of Emergence.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I also do have a Law of Emergence, like a home study course, which has over 10 hours of audio and includes the e-book and includes what I call an urgent emergence session with me. It's like a mini coaching session. And I don't know if that got put up yet as the package, but that's going to be available especially and only to this audience. I think it's normally like the value of all that with the coaching and the e-course and all that has something like a $300 and some dollar value. and it's only going to be like $97 or something. So it's literally, the e-course ends up being, I mean, the whole course becomes free, and basically, because my coaching alone is worth, is actually, if you were just a normal client calling me, it's worth more than that. And that's actually free, and I'm adding that as a free bonus to that. If it's not on the website now, they can, you know, if they sign up for the free e-course, I'll let them know, you know, about that information. If they just remind me that they were part of this call, I'll still extend that offer to them,
okay.
Which is only being extended to your list tonight.
Okay. I know we have a, it's a tinyurl.com/Derek's LOE, standing for Law of Emergence.
Right.
Which is where you can go to sign up for that free e-course. And then let's also give them your website, which is www.DerekRydell.com.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on your website. I was like, wow, this is fabulous.
And I think there might even, we might even be, if it didn't get attached, we're working on trying to even include a bonus audio with that e-course for the people on the call tonight. So,
okay.
About the law of emergence and all that. So,
wow. Well, thank you, Derek. This has really been a lot of information.
Yes, I can't help myself.
And, thank you so much.
I told you, you just give me a few words, and it's like, you know, you got to jump in there and stop me if you need to ask another question, because it just starts.
You know, it's interesting because usually writers are not the best at communicating. It's either one or the other, but you do both very well. Your writing is excellent. I loved reading. I read The Law of Emergence, and I loved reading every bit of it. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
It's a great
thank
book.
You.
So with that, we're going to say goodnight to everybody. I want to thank you again, Derek. This has really been just really informative and great information. So thank you. And thank you for everybody that's been on the call tonight and on the webcast. And we're going to say goodnight. Goodnight, Derek.
Goodnight. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.